taking steam today, after all, it seemed. That could wait until Monday morning. At last she went into the galley for a wad of paper towels and cleaned up her mess.
6.
Dan!
This time it was John.
Gotta go!
Right there, he said. I just want to splash some cold water on my face. He went down the hall listening to Abra, nodding his head slightly as if she were there. Mr. Freeman wants to know why I was crying, why I threw up. What should I tell him? For now, just that when we get there, I'll want to borrow his truck. Because we're going on, going west. Well. It was complicated, but she understood. The understanding wasn't in words and didn't need to be. Beside the bathroom wash basin was a rack holding several wrapped toothbrushes. The smallest, not wrapped, had Abra printed on the handle in rainbow letters. On one wall was a small plaque reading, "A life without love is like a tree without fruit." He looked at it for a few seconds, wondering if there was anything in the AA program to that effect. The only thing he could think of was, if you can't love anybody today, at least try not to hurt anybody. Didn't really compare. He turned on the cold water and splashed his face several times hard. Then he grabbed a towel and raised his head. No Lucy in the portrait with him this time. Just Dan Torrance, son of Jack and Wendy, who had always believed himself to be an only child. His face was covered with flies.
Part 4. Roof of the World. Chapter 18. Going West. 1. What Dan remembered best about that Saturday wasn't the ride from Boston to the Crown Motel, because the four people in John Dalton's SUV said very little. The silence wasn't uncomfortable or hostile, but exhausted. The quiet of people who have a great deal to think about, but not a hell of a lot to say. What he remembered best was what happened when they reached their destination. Dan knew she was waiting because he had been in touch with her for most of the trip, talking in a way that had become comfortable for them, half words and half pictures. When they pulled in, she was sitting on the back bumper of Billy's old truck. She saw them and jumped to her feet, waving. At that moment, the cloud cover, which had been thinning, broke apart and a ray of sun spotlighted her. It was as if God had given her a high five. Lucy gave a cry that was not quite a scream. She had her seatbelt unbuckled and her door open before John could bring his Suburban to a complete stop. 5 seconds later, she had her daughter in her arms and was kissing the top of her head, the best she could do, with Abra's face crushed between her breasts. Now the sun spotlighted them both. Mother and child's reunion, Dan thought. The smile that brought felt strange on his face. It had been a long time between smiles.
2. Lucy and David wanted to take Abra back to New Hampshire. Dan had no problem with that, but now that they were together, the six of them needed to talk. The fat man with the ponytail was back on duty, today watching a cage-fighting match instead of porn. He was happy to re-rent them room 24. It was nothing to him whether they spent the night or not. Billy went into Crownville proper to pick up a couple of pizzas. Then they settled in, Dan and Abra talking turn and turn about, filling in the others on everything that had happened and everything that was going to happen. If things went as they hoped, that was. No, Lucy said at once. It's far too dangerous for both of you. John offered a bleak grin.
The most dangerous thing would be to ignore these things. Rose says that if Abra doesn't come to her, she'll come to Abra.
She's, like, fixated on her, Billy said, and selected a slice of pepperoni and mushroom. Happens lots of times with crazy people. All you have to do to know that is watch Dr. Phil.
Lucy fixed her daughter with a reproachful glance. You goaded her. That was a dangerous thing to do. But when she has a chance to settle down?
Although no one interrupted, she trailed off. Maybe, Dan thought, she heard how implausible that sounded when it was actually articulated.
"They won't stop, Mom," Abra said. "She won't stop."
"Abra will be safe enough," Dan said. "There's a wheel. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. If things get bad, if they go wrong, Abra will use the wheel to get away, to pull out. She's promised me that."
"That's right," Abra said. "I promised."
Dan fixed her with a hard look. "And you'll keep it, won't you?"
"Yes," Abra said.
She spoke firmly enough, although with obvious reluctance.
"I will."
"There's all those kids to consider, too," John said. "We'll never know how many this true knot has taken over the years. Hundreds, maybe."
Dan thought that if they lived as long as Abra believed, the number was probably in the thousands. He said, "Or how many they will take, even if they leave Abra alone."
"That's assuming the measles doesn't kill them all," Dave said hopefully. He turned to John. "You said that really might happen."
"They want me because they think I can cure the measles," Abra said.
"Duh."
"Keep a civil tongue, miss," Lucy said. But she spoke absently. She picked up the last slice of pizza, looked at it, then threw it back in the box.
"I don't care about the other kids. I care about Abra. I know how horrible that sounds, but it's the truth."
"You wouldn't feel that way if you'd seen all those little pictures in the shopper," Abra said. "I can't get them out of my head. I dream about them sometimes."
"If this crazy woman has half a brain, she'll know Abra isn't coming alone," Dave said. "What's she going to do, fly to Denver and then rent a car, a 13-year-old? And then with a half-humorous look at his daughter, "Duh!"
Dan said, "Rose already knows from what happened at Cloud Gap that Abra's got friends. What she doesn't know is that she has at least one with the Shining."
He looked at Abra for confirmation. She nodded.
"Listen, Lucy, Dave, together, I think that Abra and I can put an end to this." He searched for the right word and found only one that fit. "Plague. Either of us alone." He shook his head.
"Besides," Abra said, "you and Dad can't really stop me. You can lock me in my room, but you can't lock up my head."
Lucy gave her the death stare, the one mothers save especially for rebellious young daughters. It had always worked with Abra, even when she was in one of her furies, but it didn't this time. She looked back at her mother calmly, and with a sadness that made Lucy's heart feel cold.
Dave took Lucy's hand.
"I think this has to be done."
There was silence in the room. Abra was the one who broke it.
"If nobody's going to eat that last slice, I am. I'm starving."
3.
They went over it several more times, and at a couple of points voices were raised, but essentially everything had been said. Except, it turned out, for one thing. When they left the room, Billy refused to get into John's Suburban.
"I'm going," he told Dan.
"Billy, I appreciate the thought, but it's not a good idea."
"My truck, my rules. Besides, are you really going to make the Colorado high country by Monday afternoon on your own? Don't make me laugh. You look like shit on a stick."
Dan said, "Several people have told me that lately, but none have put it so elegantly." Billy didn't smile.
"I can help you. I'm old, but I ain't dead."
"Take him," Abra said. "He's right."
Dan looked at her closely.
"Do you know something, Abra?"
The reply was quick.
"No. Feel something."
That was good enough for Dan. He held out his arms, and Abra hugged him hard, the side of her face pressed against his chest. Dan could have held her like that for a long time, but he let her go and stepped back.
"Let me know when you get close, Uncle Dan. I'll come. Just little touches. Remember."
She sent an image instead of a thought in words, a smoke detector beeping the way they did when they wanted a battery change. She remembered perfectly. As she went to the car, Abra said to her father, "We need to stop on the way back for a get-well card. Julie Cross broke her wrist yesterday in soccer practice. He frowned at her.
How do you know that?
I know, she said. He gently pulled one of her pigtails. You really could do it all along, couldn't you? I don't understand why you didn't just tell us, Abadou. Dan, who had grown up with The Shining, could have answered that question. Sometimes parents needed to be protected.
4. So they parted. John's SUV went east, and Billy's pickup truck went west with Billy behind the wheel. Dan said, Are you really okay to drive, Billy?
After all the sleep I got last night, sweetheart, I could drive to California.
Do you know where we're going?
I bought a road atlas in town while I was waiting for the pizza.
So you'd made up your mind even then, and you knew what Abra and I were planning.
Well, sorta.
When you need me to take over, just yell, Dan said, and promptly fell asleep with his head against the passenger window. He descended through a deepening depth of unpleasant images. First, the hedge animals at the overlook, the ones that moved when you weren't looking. This was followed by Mrs. Massey from room 217, who now wore a cocked top hat. Still descending, he revisited the battle at Cloud Gap, only this time when he burst into the Winnebago, he found Abra lying on the floor with her throat cut, and Rose standing over her with a dripping straight razor. Rose saw Dan, and the bottom half of her face dropped away in an obscene grin where one long tooth gleamed. I told her it would end this way, but she wouldn't listen, she said. Children so rarely do. Below this, there was only darkness. When he woke, it was to twilight with a broken white line running down the middle of it. They were on an interstate highway. How long did I sleep?
Billy glanced at his watch. A good long while. Feel better?
Yes, he did and didn't. His head was clear, but his stomach hurt like hell. Considering what he had seen that morning in the mirror, he wasn't surprised. Where are we?
150 miles east of Cincinnati, give or take. You slept through 2 gas stops, and you snore.
Dan sat up straight. We're in Ohio? Christ, what time is it?
Billy glanced at his watch. 6:15. Wasn't no big thing. Light traffic and no rain. I think we got an angel riding with us.
Well, let's find a motel. You need to sleep, and I have to piss like a racehorse.
Not surprised.
Billy pulled off at the next exit, showing signs for gas, food, and motels. He pulled into a Wendy's and got a bag of burgers while Dan used the men's. When they got back into the truck, Dan took one bite of his double, put it back in the bag, and sipped cautiously at a coffee milkshake. That, his stomach seemed willing to take. Billy looked shocked.
Man, you gotta eat. What's wrong with you?
I guess pizza for breakfast was a bad idea. And because Billy was still looking at him. The shake's fine, all I need. Eyes on the road, Billy. We can't help Abra if we're getting patched up in some emergency room. 5 minutes later, Billy pulled the truck under the canopy of a Fairfield Inn with a blinking Rooms Available sign over the door. He turned off the engine, but didn't get out.
Since I'm risking my life with you, Chief, I want to know what ails you.
Dan almost pointed out that taking the risk had been Billy's idea, not his, but that wasn't fair. He explained. Billy listened in round-eyed silence.
Jesus jumped up Christ, he said when Dan had finished.
Unless I missed it, Dan said, there's nothing in the New Testament about Jesus jumping. Although I guess he might have as a child. Most of them do. You want to check us in, or should I do it?
Billy continued to sit where he was.
Does Abra know?
Dan shook his head.
But she could find out.
Could, but won't. She knows it's wrong to peek, especially when it's someone you care about. She'd no more do it than she'd spy on her parents when they were making love.
You know that from when you were a kid?
Yes, sometimes you see a little. You can't help it, but then you turn away.
Are you gonna be all right, Danny?
For a while. He thought of the sluggish flies on his lips and cheeks and forehead. Long enough.
What about after?
I worry about after. One day at a time. Let's check in. We need to get an early start.
Have you heard from Abra?
Dan smiled. She's fine. At least so far.
5.
But she wasn't. Not really. She sat at her desk with a half-read copy of The Fixer in her hand, trying not to look at her bedroom window, lest she should see a certain someone looking in at her. She knew something was wrong with Dan, and she knew he didn't want her to know what it was, but had been tempted to look anyway, in spite of all the years she'd taught herself to steer clear of APB, adult private business. Two things held her back. One was the knowledge that, like it or not, she couldn't help him with it now. The other, this was stronger, was knowing he might sense her in his head. If so, he would be disappointed in her. It's probably locked up anyway, she thought. He can do that. He's pretty strong. Not as strong as she was, though. Or, if you put it in terms of The Shining, as bright. She could open his mental lockboxes and peer at the things inside, but she thought doing so might be dangerous for both of them. There was no concrete reason for this. It was just a feeling, like the one she'd had about how it would be a good idea for Mr. Freeman to go with Dan. But she trusted it. Besides, maybe it was something that could help them. She could hope for that. True hope is swift and flies on swallow's wings. That was another line from Shakespeare. Don't you look at that window either. Don't you dare. No. Absolutely not. Never. So she did. And there was Rose, grinning in at her from below her rakishly tilted hat. All billowing hair, and pale porcelain skin, and dark mad eyes, and rich red lips masking that one snaggle tooth. That tusk. You're going to die, screaming. Bitch girl. Abra closed her eyes and thought hard. Not there, not there, not there. And opened them again. The grinning face at the window was gone. But not really. Somewhere high in the mountains, at the roof of the world, Rose was thinking about her. And waiting.
6.
The motel had a breakfast buffet. Because his traveling companion was watching him, Dan made a point of eating some cereal and yogurt. Billy looked relieved. While he checked them out, Dan strolled to the lobby men's room. Once inside, he turned the lock, fell to his knees, and vomited up everything he'd eaten. The undigested cereal and yogurt floated in a red foam.
All right?
Billy asked when Dan rejoined him at the desk. Fine, Dan said. Let's roll.
7.
According to Billy's road atlas, it was about 1,200 miles from Cincinnati to Denver. Sidewinder lay roughly 75 miles further west, along roads full of switchbacks and lined with steep drops. Dan tried driving for a while on that Sunday afternoon, but tired quickly and turned the wheel over to Billy again. He fell asleep, and when he woke up, the sun was going down. They were in Iowa, home of the late Brad Trevor.
Abra.
He had been afraid distance would make mental communication difficult or even impossible, but she came back promptly and as strong as ever. If she'd been a radio station, she would have been broadcasting at 100,000 watts. She was in her room, pecking away on her computer at some homework assignment or other. He was both amused and saddened to realize she had Hoppy, her stuffed rabbit, on her lap. The strain of what they were doing had regressed her to a younger Abra, at least on the emotional side. With the line between them wide open, she caught this.
Don't worry about me,
I'm all right. Good, because you have a call to make. Yes, okay. Are you all right? Fine.
She knew better but didn't ask, and that was just the way he wanted it.
Have you got the...
She made a picture.
Not yet. It's Sunday. Store's not open.
Another picture. One that made him smile. A Walmart, except the sign out front read, Abra's Superstore.
They wouldn't sell us what we need. We'll find one that will. Okay. I guess. You know what to say to her? Yes. She'll try to suck you into a long conversation. Try to snoop. Don't let her. I won't. Let me hear from you after so I won't worry.
Of course he would worry plenty.
I will. I love you, Uncle Dan. Love you too.
He made a kiss. Abra made one back. Big red cartoon lips. He could almost feel them on his cheek. And then she was gone. Billy was staring at him.
You were just talking to her, weren't you?
Indeed I was. Eyes on the road, Billy.
Yeah, yeah. You sound like my ex-wife.
Billy put on his blinker, switched to the passing lane, and rolled past a huge and lumbering Fleetwood Pace Arrow motorhome. Dan stared at it, wondering who was inside and if they were looking out the tinted windows.
I want to make another 100 or so miles before we quit for the night, Billy said. Way I got tomorrow, figured. That should give us an hour to do your errand and still put us in the high country about the time you and Abra set for the showdown. But we'll want to get on the road before daybreak.
Fine. You understand how this will go.
I get how it's supposed to go, Billy glanced at him. You better hope that if they have binoculars, they don't use them. Do you think we might come back alive? Tell me the truth. If the answer's no, I'm gonna order me the biggest steak dinner you ever saw when we stop for the night. MasterCard can chase my relatives for the last credit card bill. And guess what? I ain't got any relatives. Unless you count the ex. And if I was on fire, she wouldn't piss on me to put me out.
We'll come back, Dan said. But it sounded pale. He felt too sick to put up much of a front.
Yeah? Well, maybe I'll have that steak dinner anyway. What about you?
I think I could manage a little soup, as long as it's clear. The thought of eating anything too thick to read a newspaper through, tomato bisque, cream of mushroom, made his stomach cringe.
Okay. Why don't you close your eyes again?
Dan knew he couldn't sleep deeply no matter how tired and sick he felt. Not while Abra was dealing with the ancient horror that looked like a woman. But he managed a doze. It was thin, but rich enough to grow more dreams. First of the Overlook. Today's version featured the elevator that ran by itself in the middle of the night. Then of his niece. This time, Abra had been strangled with a length of electrical cord. She stared at Dan with bulging, accusing eyes. It was all too easy to read what was in them. You said you'd help me. You said you'd save me. Where were you?
8. Abra kept putting off the thing she had to do until she realized her mother would soon be pestering her to go to bed. She wasn't going to school in the morning, but it was still going to be a big day, and perhaps a very long night.
Putting things off only makes them worse, cara mia. That was the gospel according to Momo.
Abra looked toward her window, wishing she could see her great-grandma there instead of Rose. That would be good.
Moms, I'm so scared, she said. But after two long and steadying breaths, she picked up her iPhone and dialed the Overlook Lodge at Bluebell Campground. A man answered, and when Abra said she wanted to talk to Rose, he asked who she was.
You know who I am, she said, and with what she hoped was irritating inquisitiveness. Are you sick yet, mister?
The man on the other end, it was Toady Slim, didn't answer that, but she heard him murmur to someone. A moment later, Rose was on, her composure once more firmly in place.
Hello, dear. Where are you?
On my way, Abra said.
Are you really? That's nice, dear.
So I don't suppose that I'd find this call came from a New Hampshire area code if I *69'd it.
Of course you would, Abra said. I'm using my cell.
You need to get with the 21st century, bitch.
What do you want?
The voice on the other end was now curt.
To make sure you know the rules, Abra said. I'll be there at 5 tomorrow. I'll be in an old red truck.
Driven by whom?
My Uncle Billy, Abra said.
Was he one of the ones from the ambush?
He's the one who was with me and the crow. Stop asking questions. Just shut up and listen.
So rude, Rose said sadly.
He'll park at the end of the lot by the sign that says, Kids Eat Free When Colorado Pro Teams Win.
I see you've been on our website. That's sweet. Or was it your uncle, perhaps?
He's very brave to act as your chauffeur. Is he your father's brother or your mother's?
Rube families are a hobby of mine. I make family trees.
She'll try to snoop, Dan had told her, and how right he was. What part of shut up and listen don't you understand? Do you want this to happen or not?
No reply, just waiting silence. Creepy waiting silence.
From the parking lot, we'll be able to see everything. The campground, the lodge, and roof of the world on top of the hill. My uncle and me better see you up there, and we better not see the people from your true knot anywhere. They're going to stay in that meeting hall thingy while we do our business. In the big room, got it? Uncle Billy won't know if they're not where they're supposed to be, but I will. If I pick up a single one somewhere else, we'll be gone.
Your uncle will stay in his truck.
No, I'll stay in the truck until we're sure. Then he'll get back in, and I'll come to you. I don't want him anywhere near you.
All right, dear. It will be as you say.
No, it won't. You're lying. But so was Abra, which kind of made them even.
I have one really important question, dear, Rose said pleasantly.
Abra almost asked what it was, then remembered her uncle's advice. Her real uncle. One question, right, which would lead to another, and another, and another. Choke on it, she said, and hung up. Her hands began to tremble, then her legs and arms and shoulders.
Abra,
Mom, calling from the foot of the stairs. She feels it, just a little, but she does feel it. Is that a Mom thing or a Shining thing?
Honey, are you okay?
Fine, Mom. Getting ready for bed.
10 minutes, then we're coming up for kisses. Be in your PJs.
I will.
If they knew who I was just talking to, Abra thought, but they didn't.
They only thought they knew what was going on. She was here in her bedroom. Every door and window in the house was locked, and they believed that made her safe. Even her father, who had seen the true knot in action. But Dan knew. She closed her eyes and reached out to him.
9. Dan and Billy were under another motel canopy, and still nothing from Abra. That was bad.
Come on, Chief, Billy said. Let's get you inside and...
Then she was there, thank God.
Hush a minute, Dan said, and listened.
2 minutes later, he turned to Billy, who thought the smile on his face finally made him look like Dan Torres again.
Was it her?
Yes.
How'd it go?
Abra says it went fine. We're in business.
No questions about me?
Just which side of the family you were on. Listen, Billy... The uncle thing was a bit of a mistake. You're way too old to be Lucy's or David's brother. When we stop tomorrow to do our errand, you need to buy sunglasses, big ones, and keep that ball cap of yours jammed down all the way to your ears so your hair doesn't show.
Maybe I should get some just for men while I'm at it.
Don't sass me, you old fart.
That made Billy grin.
Let's get Ratterstead and get some food. You look better. Like you could actually eat.
Soup, Dan said. No sense pressing my luck.
Soup, right.
He ate it all. Slowly. And, reminding himself that this would be over one way or the other in less than 24 hours, he managed to keep it down. They dined in Billy's room, and when he was finally finished, Dan stretched out on the carpet. It eased the pain in his gut a little.
What's that? Billy asked. Some kind of yogi shit?
Exactly. I learned it watching Yogi Bear cartoons. Run it down for me again.
I got it, Chief. Don't worry. Now you're starting to sound like Casey Kingsley.
A scary thought. Now run it down again.
Abra starts pinging around Denver. If they have someone who can listen, they'll know she's coming and that she's in the neighborhood. We got to Sidewinder early, say 4 instead of 5, and drive right past the road to the campground. They won't see the truck unless they post a sentry down by the highway, that is.
I don't think they will. Dan thought of another AA aphorism. We're powerless over people, places, and things. Like most alky nuggets, it was 70% true and 30% rah-rah bullshit. In any case, we can't control everything. Carry on.
There's a picnic area about a mile farther up the road. You went there a couple of times with your mom before you guys got snowed in for the winter.
Billy paused.
Just her and you? Never your dad?
He was writing, working on a play. Go on. Billy did. Dan listened closely, then nodded. Okay. You've got it.
Didn't I say? Now can I ask a question?
Sure.
By tomorrow afternoon, will you still be able to walk a mile?
I'll be able to. I better be.
10. Thanks to an early start, 4 a.m., long before first light, Dan Torrance and Billy Freeman began to see a horizon-spanning cloud shortly after 9 a.m. An hour later, by which time the blue-gray cloud had resolved itself into a mountain range, they stopped in the town of Martinville, Colorado. There, on the short and mostly deserted Main Street, Dan saw not what he was hoping for, but something even better, a children's clothing store called Kid Stuff. Half a block down was a drugstore flanked by a dusty-looking hock shop and a Video Express with "Closing, must sell all stock at bargain prices" soaped in the window. He sent Billy to Martinville Drugs and Sundries to get sunglasses and stepped through the door of Kid Stuff. The place had an unhappy, losing-hope vibe. He was the only customer. Here was somebody's good idea going bad, probably thanks to the big-box small stores in Sterling or Fort Morgan. Why buy local when you could drive a little and get cheaper pants and dresses for back to school? So what if they were made in Mexico or Costa Rica? A tired-looking woman with a tired-looking hairdo came out from behind the counter and gave Dan a tired-looking smile. She asked if she could help him. Dan said she could. When he told her what he wanted, her eyes went round. "I know it's unusual," Dan said, "but get with me on this a little. I'll pay cash." He got what he wanted. In little, losing-hope stores off the turnpike, the C-word went a long way.
11. As they neared Denver, Dan got in touch with Abra. He closed his eyes and visualized the wheel they both now knew about. In the town of Anniston, Abra did the same. It was easier this time. When he opened his eyes again, he was looking down the slope of the stone's back lawn at the Saco River gleaming in the afternoon sun. Abra opened hers on a view of the Rockies.
"Wow! Uncle Billy, they're beautiful, aren't they?"
Billy glanced at the man sitting beside him. Dan had crossed his legs in a way that was utterly unlike him and was bouncing one foot. Color had come back into his cheeks, and there was a bright clarity in his eyes that had been missing on their run west.
"They sure are, honey," he said.
Dan smiled and closed his eyes. When he opened them again,
The health Abra had brought to his face was fading, like a rose without water, Billy thought.
Anything?
Ping, Dan said. He smiled again, but this one was weary. Like a smoke detector that needs a battery change.
Do you think they had it?
I sure hope so, Dan said. 12. Rose was pacing back and forth near her Earth cruiser when Token Charlie came running up. The True had taken steam that morning, all but one of the canisters she had in storage, and on top of what Rose had taken on her own over the last couple of days, she was too wired even to think about sitting down.
What? She asked. Tell me something good.
I got her. How's that for good?
Wired himself, Charlie grabbed Rose by the arms and whirled her around, making her hair fly.
I got her! Just for a few seconds, but it was her.
Did you see the uncle?
No, she was looking out the windshield at the mountains. She said they were beautiful.
They are, Rose said. A grin was spreading on her lips. Don't you agree, Charlie?
And he said they sure were. They're coming, Rosie. They really are.
Did she know you were there? He let go of her, frowning.
I can't say for sure. Grandpa Flick probably could.
Just tell me what you think.
Probably not.
That's good enough for me. Go someplace quiet, someplace where you can concentrate without being disturbed. Sit and listen. If, when, you pick her up again, let me know. I don't want to lose track of her if I can help it. If you need more steam, ask for it. I saved a little.
No, I'm fine. I'll listen. I'll listen hard.
Token Charlie gave a rather wild laugh and rushed off. Rose didn't think he had any idea where he was going, and she didn't care. As long as he kept listening. 13. Dan and Billy were at the foot of the Flatirons by noon. As he watched the Rockies draw closer, Dan thought of all the wandering years he had avoided them. That, in turn, made him think of some poem or other, one about how you could spend years running, but in the end you always wound up facing yourself in a hotel room with a naked bulb hanging overhead and a revolver on the table. Because they had time, they left the freeway and drove into Boulder. Billy was hungry. Dan wasn't, but he was curious. Billy pulled the truck into a sandwich shop parking lot, but when he asked Dan what he could get him, Dan only shook his head.
Sure? You got a lot ahead of you.
I'll eat when this is over.
Well,
Billy went into the Subway for a buffalo chicken. Dan got in touch with Abra. The wheel turned. Ping. When Billy came out, Dan nodded to his wrapped footlong. Save that a couple of minutes. As long as we're in Boulder, there's something I want to check out. 5 minutes later, they were on Arapahoe Street. 2 blocks from the seedy little bar and cafe district, he told Billy to pull over. Go on and chow that chicken. I won't be long. Dan got out of the truck and stood on the cracked sidewalk, looking at a slumped 3-story building with a sign in the window reading, Efficiency Apartments, Good Student Value. The lawn was balding. Weeds grew up through the cracks in the sidewalk. He had doubted that this place would still be here, had believed that Arapahoe would now be a street of condos populated by well-to-do slackers who drank lattes from Starbucks, checked their Facebook pages 6 times a day, and twittered like mad bastards. But here it was, and looking, so far as he could tell, exactly as it had back in the day. Billy joined him, sandwich in one hand.
We've still got 75 miles ahead of us, Dano. Best we get our asses up the pass.
Right, Dan said, then went on looking at the building with the peeling green paint. Once, a little boy had lived here. Once, he had sat on the very piece of curbing where Billy Freeman now stood munching his chicken footlong. A little boy,
waiting for his daddy to come home from his job interview at the Overlook Hotel. He had a balsa glider, that little boy, but the wing was busted. It was okay, though. When his daddy came home, he would fix it with tape and glue. Then maybe they would fly it together. His daddy had been a scary man, and how that little boy had loved him. Dan said, "I lived here with my mother and father before we moved up to the Overlook. Not much, is it?" Billy shrugged. "I seen worse." In his wandering years, Dan had too. Deanie's apartment in Wilmington, for instance. He pointed left. There was a bunch of bars down that way. One was called the Broken Drum. Looks like Urban Renewal missed this side of town, so maybe it's still there. When my father and I walked past it, he'd always stop and look in the window, and I could feel how thirsty he was to go inside. So thirsty it made me thirsty. I drank a lot of years to quench that thirst, but it never really goes away. My dad knew that, even then. But you loved him, I guess. I did, still looking at that shambling, run-down apartment house. Not much. But Dan couldn't help wondering how different their lives might have been if they had stayed there, if the Overlook had not ensnared them. He was good and bad, and I loved both sides of him. God help me, I guess I still do.
You and most kids, Billy said. You love your folks and hope for the best. What else can you do? Come on, Dan. If we're gonna do this, we have to go.
Half an hour later, Boulder was behind them, and they were climbing into the Rockies. Chapter 19. Ghosty People. 1. Although sunset was approaching, in New Hampshire at least, Abra was still on the back stoop looking down at the river. Hoppy was sitting nearby on the lid of the composter. Lucy and David came out and sat on either side of her. John Dalton watched them from the kitchen, holding a cold cup of coffee. His black bag was on the counter, but there was nothing in it he could use this evening. "You should come in and have some supper," Lucy said, knowing that Abra wouldn't, probably couldn't, until this was over. But you clung to the known. Because everything looked normal, and because the danger was over 1,000 miles away, that was easier for her than for her daughter. Although Abra's complexion had previously been clear, as unblemished as when she was an infant, she now had nests of acne around the wings of her nose and an ugly cluster of pimples on her chin. Just hormones kicking in, heralding the onset of true adolescence, so Lucy would have liked to believe, because that was normal. But stress caused acne, too. Then there was the pallor of her daughter's skin, and the dark circles beneath her eyes. She looked almost as ill as Dan did when Lucy had last seen him, climbing with painful slowness into Mr. Freeman's pickup truck.
"Can't eat now, Mom. No time. I probably couldn't keep it down anyway."
"How soon before this happens, Abby?" David asked.
She looked at neither of them. She looked fixedly down at the river, but Lucy knew she wasn't really looking at that either. She was far away, in a place where none of them could help her.
"Not long. You should each give me a kiss and then go inside."
"But," Lucy began, then saw David shake his head at her. Only once, but very firmly. She sighed, took one of Abra's hands, how cold it was, and planted a kiss on her left cheek. David put one on her right.
"Remember what Dan said. If things go wrong, you should go in now, guys. When it starts, I'm going to take Hoppy and put him in my lap. When you see that, you can't interrupt me. Not for anything. You could get Uncle Dan killed, and maybe Billy too. I might fall over, like in a faint, but it won't be a faint, so don't move me, and don't let Dr. John move me either. Just let me be until it's over. I think Dan knows a place where we can be together.
David said, I don't understand how this can possibly work. That woman Rose will see there's no little girl.
You need to go in now,
Abra said. They did as she said. Lucy looked pleadingly at John. He could only shrug and shake his head. The three of them stood at the kitchen window, arms around one another, looking out at the little girl sitting on the stoop with her arms clasped around her knees. There was no danger to be seen. All was placid. But when Lucy saw Abra, her little girl, reach for Hoppy and take the old stuffed rabbit on her lap, she groaned. John squeezed her shoulder. David tightened the arm around her waist, and she gripped his hand with panicky tightness.
Please let my daughter be all right. If something has to happen, something bad, let it happen to the half-brother I never knew. Not to her.
It'll be okay, Dave said. She nodded.
Of course it will. Of course it will.
They watched the girl on the stoop. Lucy understood that if she did call to Abra, she wouldn't answer. Abra was gone. 2. Billy and Dan reached the turnoff to the True's Colorado base of operations at 20-4 mountain time, which put them comfortably ahead of schedule. There was a wooden ranch-style arch over the paved road with, "Welcome to the Bluebell Campground. Stay a while, partner," carved into it. The sign beside the road was a lot less welcoming, closed until further notice. Billy drove past without slowing, but his eyes were busy.
"Don't see nobody. Not even on the lawns. Although I suppose they could have stashed someone in that welcome hut doohickey. Jesus, Danny, you look just awful."
"Lucky for me, the Mr. America competition isn't until later this year," Dan said. "1 mile up, maybe a little less. The sign says scenic turnout and picnic area."
"What if they posted someone there?"
"They haven't."
"How can you be sure?"
"Because neither Abra nor her Uncle Billy could possibly know about it, never having been here, and the True doesn't know about me."
"You better hope they don't."
"Abra says everyone's where they're supposed to be. She's been checking. Now be quiet a minute, Billy. I need to think." It was Halloran he wanted to think about. For several years following their haunted winter at the Overlook, Danny Torrance and Dick Halloran had talked a lot. Sometimes face to face, more often mind to mind. Danny loved his mother, but there were things she didn't, couldn't understand. About the lock boxes, for instance. The ones where you put the dangerous things that the Shining sometimes attracted. Not that the lockbox thing always worked. On several occasions, he had tried to make one for the drinking, but that effort had been an abject failure, perhaps because he had wanted it to be a failure. Mrs. Massey, though, and Horace Derwent. There was a third lockbox in storage now, but it wasn't as good as the ones he'd made as a kid. Because he wasn't as strong? Because what it held was different from the revenants that had been unwise enough to seek him out? Both? He didn't know. He only knew that it was leaky. When he opened it, what was inside might kill him. But...
"What do you mean?" Billy asked.
"Huh?" Dan looked around. One hand was pressed to his stomach. It hurt very badly now.
"You just said, there isn't any choice. What did you mean?"
"Never mind." They had reached the picnic area, and Billy was turning in. Up ahead was a clearing with picnic benches and barbecue pits. To Dan, it looked like Cloud Gap without the river. "Just... if things go wrong, get in your truck and drive like hell."
"You think that would help?"
Dan didn't reply. His gut was burning, burning. 3. Shortly before 4 o'clock on that Monday afternoon in late September, Rose walked up to Roof of the World with Silent Sairy. Rose was dressed in form-fitting jeans that accentuated her long and shapely legs.
Although it was chilly, Silent Sayri wore only a house dress of unremarkable light blue that fluttered around stout calves clad in Jobst support stockings. Rose stopped to look at a plaque which had been bolted to a granite post at the base of the 36 or so stairs leading up to the lookout platform. It announced that this was the site of the historic Overlook Hotel, which had burned to the ground some 35 years ago. "Very strong feelings here, Sayri." Sayri nodded. "You know there are hot springs where steam comes right out of the ground, don't you?" "Lup." "This is like that." Rose bent down to sniff at the grass and wildflowers. Below their aromas was the iron smell of ancient blood. "Strong emotions. Hatred. Fear. Prejudice. Lust. The echo of murder. Not food. Too old, but refreshing all the same. A heady bouquet." Sayri said nothing, but watched Rose closely. "And this thing," Rose waved a hand at the steep wooden stairs leading up to the platform, "looks like a gallows, don't you think? All it needs is a trap door." Nothing from Sayri, out loud at least. Her thought, "no rope," was clear enough. "That's true, my love, but one of us is going to hang here, just the same. Either me or the little bitch with her nose in our business. See that?" Rose pointed to a small green shed about 20 feet away. Sayri nodded. Rose was wearing a zipper pack on her belt. She opened it, rummaged, brought out a key, and handed it to the other woman. Sayri walked to the shed, grass wickering against her thick, flesh-colored hose. The key fitted a padlock on the door. When she pulled the door open, late-day sunshine illuminated an enclosure not much bigger than a privy. There was a lawn boy, and a plastic bucket holding a hand sickle and a rake. A spade and a pickaxe leaned against the back wall. There was nothing else, and nothing to hide behind. "Go on in," Rose said. "Let's see what you can do." "And with all that steam inside you, you should be able to amaze me." Like other members of the True Knot, Silent Sayri had her little talent. She stepped into the little shed, sniffed, and said, "Dusty." "Never mind the dust. Let's see you do your thing. Or rather, let's not see you." For that was Sayri's talent. She wasn't capable of invisibility. None of them was. But she could create a kind of dimness that went very well with her unremarkable face and figure. She turned to Rose, then looked down at her shadow. She moved, not much, only half a step, and her shadow merged with the one thrown by the handle of the lawn boy. Then she became perfectly still, and the shed was empty. Rose squeezed her eyes shut, then popped them wide open, and there was Sayri, standing beside the mower with her hands folded demurely at her waist like a shy girl, hoping some boy at the party will ask her to dance. Rose looked away at the mountains, and when she looked back again, the shed was empty, just a tiny storage room with nowhere to hide. In the strong sunlight, there wasn't even a shadow, except for the one thrown by the mower's handle, that was. Only... "Pull your elbow in," Rose said. "I see it, just a little." Silent Sayri did as she was told, and for a moment she was truly gone, at least until Rose concentrated. When she did that, Sayri was there again. But of course she knew Sayri was there. When the time came, and it wouldn't be long, the bitch girl wouldn't. "Good, Sayri," she said warmly, or as warmly as she could manage. "Perhaps I won't need you. If I do, you'll use the sickle, and think of Andy when you do. All right?" At the mention of Andy's name, Sayri's lips turned down in a moo of unhappiness. She stared at the sickle in the plastic bucket and nodded.
Rose walked over and took the padlock.
I'm going to lock you in now. The bitch girl will read the ones in the lodge, but she won't read you. I'm sure of it, because you're the quiet one, aren't you?
Sayri nodded again. She was the quiet one. Always had been.
What about the...
Rose smiled.
The lock? Don't you worry about that. Just worry about being still. Still and silent. Do you understand me?
Lup.
And you understand about the sickle?
Rose would not have trusted Sayri with a gun even if the true had one.
Sicka. Lup.
If I get the better of her, and as full of steam as I am right now, there should be no problem. You'll stay right where you are until I let you out. But if you hear me shout... Let's see. If you hear me shout, don't make me punish you, that means I need help. I'll make sure that her back is turned. You know what happens then, don't you?
I'll climb the stairs and...
But Rose was shaking her head.
No, Sayri, you won't need to. She's never going to get near the platform up there.
She would hate to lose the steam, even more than she would hate losing the opportunity to kill the bitch girl herself, after making her suffer, and at length. But she mustn't throw caution to the winds. The girl was very strong.
What will you listen for, Sayri?
Don't make me punish Lou.
And what will you be thinking of? The eyes, half hidden by the shaggy bangs, gleamed.
Revenge.
That's right. Revenge for Andy, murdered by the bitch girl's friends. But not unless I need you, because I want to do this myself.
Rose's hands clenched, her nails digging into deep, blood-crusted crescents they had already made in her palms.
But if I need you, you come. Don't hesitate or stop for anything. Don't stop until you've put that sickle blade in her neck and see the end of it come out of her fucking throat.
Sari's eyes gleamed.
Lup.
Good.
Rose kissed her, then shut the door and snapped the padlock closed. She put the key in her zipper pack and leaned against the door.
Listen to me, sweetheart. If all goes well, you'll get the first steam. I promise, and it will be the best you ever had.
Rose walked back to the lookout platform, took several long and steadying breaths, and then began to climb the steps. 4. Dan stood with his hands propped against one of the picnic tables, head down, eyes closed.
Doing it this way is crazy, Billy said. I should stay with you.
You can't. You've got your own fish to fry.
What if you faint halfway down that path? Even if you don't, how are you going to take on the whole bunch of them? The way you look now, you couldn't go 2 rounds with a 5-year-old.
I think pretty soon I'm going to feel a whole lot better. Stronger, too. Go on, Billy. You remember where to park?
Far end of the lot. By the sign that says kids eat for 3 when the Colorado teams win.
Right. Dan raised his head and noted the oversized sunglasses Billy was now wearing. Pull your cap down hard, all the way to your ears. Look young.
I might have a trick that'll make me look even younger. If I can still do it, that is.
Dan barely heard this. I need one other thing. He stood up straight and opened his arms. Billy hugged him, wanting to do it hard, fiercely, and not daring. Abra made a good call. I never would have gotten here without you. Now take care of your business.
You take care of yours, Billy said. I'm counting on you to drive the Thanksgiving run out to Cloud Gap.
I'd like that, Dan said. Best model train set a boy never had. Billy watched him walk slowly, holding his hands against his stomach as he went to the signpost on the far side of the clearing. There were 2 wooden arrows, one pointed west toward Pawnee Lookout. The other pointed east, downhill. This one read, to Bluebell Campground.
Dan started along that path. For a little while, Billy could see him through the glowing yellow leaves of the aspens, walking slowly and painfully, his head down to watch his footing. Then he was gone. "Take care of my boy," Billy said. He wasn't sure if he was talking to